Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. We're on time tonight. This is Jackie Salvitti and my wonderful co-host, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, my darling. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm really looking forward to this show.
Oh, good. Well, tonight's show should be interesting. We stay in the shadow, of course, recognizing and ending the influence of lineage and the dark laws of our families and our lives today. And
and I would just like to say something. Is I don't think we're going to take any callers tonight. Thank you, everybody. But it was, if you want to ask a question, maybe send it by email for next week. But I think it's harder to take callers.
That's a great idea. Thank you, Veronica. And, you know, if we have time at the end of the show, we'll open it up. But it's really tough to get through all the information. I have a hard enough time keeping a train of thought these days.
Evolution will do that to you, Jackie.
Yes, I know. I know. Is it evolution, ascension, or all of the above?
Are they the same anyway?
I think so. Tonight we're going to discuss how to recognize the influence of the beliefs and influences of our family in our lives today. And really paying close attention to the themes that are playing out in our lives now and how we end them. You know, I just think this is so powerful, and also living out the dark laws of our lineage. And before we get into the subject, I do want to do a dedication tonight to all the people who are dealing with poverty and hunger on the planet, and that miracles abound for them to experience plenty of food, shelter, and abundance to supply their needs.
And respect.
I really, when we all gather together, and if everybody would join with us in this, I know that we can create incredible miracles as a group. And so that's the reason that we've started doing the dedication. I celebrate all of you that are listening all over the world. I know how powerful you all are. Whether you listen to the show tonight live or do it in your home at a later date, your energy added to the group is so powerful and so important. For those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, the energies are coming directly into your home through your computer. If you want to invite these very loving, benevolent beings in to work with you, they are happy to do so. They will never invade your space without permission. However, sometimes people's higher selves have said, come on in. And people haven't been totally aware, but I have yet to have anybody call me up and say, gee, I'm never listening to your show again. So they're having great fun with this. I just want everybody to know how wonderfully funny and incredibly loving that they are. There is nothing scary about any of this. It is just incredibly beautiful. They're having a wonderful time participating.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of.
Well, we started this show once and we were on time, but we're starting it again. Evidently, we.
Isn't this a time of new beginnings anyway?
Yes, it is. And we do have some phone line problems, folks, because the beings are working through the computer and wanting to work with you directly. So let's begin again. Good evening, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti and my fabulous co-host, Veronica Ann Whistle.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
And tonight, the shadow continues, recognizing and ending the influence of lineage and dark laws of our families in our lives today. Tonight we're going to discuss how to recognize the influence of these beliefs and influences of our families, and what are the themes that are playing out in your lives now, and how do you end them, and are you living out dark laws of your lineage?
What are exactly the dark laws? What exactly are the dark laws?
I love you, Veronica. You always get me out of order.
Just ruffling your hair a little, Jackie. Well, you can't leave me behind. I got to figure it all out.
Okay. Dark laws are pretty simple. These are many times implied. And in families, I'll give you examples, okay? Life is hard. You have to work hard to get anywhere. Love hurts. Most children learn this in families very early on. Or there is no love. I have to survive. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm.
Suffer here and get your rewards in heaven. I love
mm-hmm.
this one.
Yeah.
Life isn't safe. Many children learn very early on that life's not safe. And so they compensate in whatever way they have to survive. And then also we get these from parents about, which is so powerful, okay? You can't trust men or you can't trust women. And these are just a few of the dark laws.
How about this one that don't talk to men about anything emotional because they can't handle it.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Well, and this comes from... parents, if you've grown up with a parent who complains about the other parent, and I think everybody has had this experience, that becomes ingrained very early on.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's mom complaining about dad, although, you know, sons hear this from their dads, you know, complaining about the mom. And then you have the other one, which is the contracts that you make in childhood. And these are the contracts you cannot access. They are so deep in the subconscious. These are children who look around and go, no way am I going to ever do this. I'm never going to. I will never, this will never happen to me, etc. And they actually make a contract. Therapists know that this goes, there are little openings that occur in childhood. And when those openings occur, if they are making that contract during that time, it goes so deep, it's inaccessible.
Hmm.
So these are big, very big issues. Dark laws, and the dark laws also are ethnic laws, religious laws, you know, that have carried forward generationally. And there are oftentimes themes in families. But before we get into that, Veronica, I want to read you the dedication here. Tonight I'd like to dedicate the show to all people who are dealing with poverty and hunger on the planet, and that miracles abound for them to experience plenty of food, shelter, and abundance to supply their needs. And I know that as a group, when we all come together via the radio or any form of media, that if we hold a resonance for a miracle, we can make it happen. I mean, we're that far along in the ascension process that it's time to start kind of flexing our spiritual muscles here
our
magical muscles.
You bet.
The other thing I want to say to people who may be listening for the first time tonight is that the energies come through the computer right into your home. Now, the beings that are involved are incredibly loving and very funny. There are angelic beings. There are beings of other dimensions and realms. There are extraterrestrials. This is not opening yourself up for abductions or interference, negative interference. There is just kind of a, think of it as a grand cosmic party of beings who are saying, gee, these people are inviting us in, and we are happy to be there and to help. If there is some specific area of healing that you're looking for, emotional, financial, physical, whatever it may be, you're certainly invited to request that help. Okay. Let's go back for a minute, and then we'll get into your original question, which was in the other show that the phone line didn't work. It was Sunday. I sent out a newsletter, and I had more comments on that newsletter than I've ever had. I was absolutely amazed. I was really sharing my own personal experience. And for those who have not signed up for the newsletter, the subject was about the November 26th full moon, which was the opening of the twin flame energy and the integration of the divine masculine and feminine within and without. I actually shared my own personal experience, and I had a big aha moment with someone that I've met, and the insight which came to me during the night, and I got out of bed because I was so absolutely blown away by it. And I'm just going to quote from the newsletter. There it was before me, the theme of lifetimes of my lineage, the powerful feminine. I could see it with my relatives, all the women who exemplified the powerful feminine, stronger than their husbands and other men, but not fully integrated. They were convinced that men were weak and not trustworthy, and it had been ingrained into me through that lineage, as well as my own mother's words. Now, even though I didn't spend a lot of time with her, trust me, this was her thing. And so I lived that example with the choices that I've made with men. And then that went on to my daughter and to my granddaughter. And I mean, I was seeing all this in Technicolor. It was just so amazing to me. And the person that I had met had exactly the same issues, coming from a long line of very powerful men. And you know, the same issues in terms of women are not trustworthy. And I thought, wow, what an opportunity to bring that healing together, to kind of delve into how do you heal, you know, if you're healing this lineage over here and this lineage over here, and we have an opportunity to trust, to change that whole dynamic. So you asked an interesting question earlier, Veronica, if you want to jump on that one.
What, about what the dark laws are?
What are dark laws, yeah. Right. And these are the laws that you grew up with and the beliefs that your family held, spoken and unspoken. They're implied. And a lot
but
of...
But they are like contracts, are they?
Yes, they have a religious basis, mm-hmm. Many times, especially in religious households. Get your rewards in heaven. Suffer here, you know, and
suffer gladly.
Yes. Oh, that's
whoopee, that hurts.
Life is hard.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge one for so many people, especially in our age group. You know, that life is hard. They grew up in families where people suffered and struggled. You have to work harder. You know, there's no free lunch. The old suffer here, get your rewards in heaven. Love isn't safe, and this is for so many people grew up in families where love was not safe. And also where life isn't safe. And that's another big issue. And then, of course, this is where it's born with that whole you can't trust men or you can't trust women. These are just a few of them. I mean, there's also, of course, the dark laws that come from your nationality, your religion, and your region. Now, one thing I have learned with Veronica is that Veronica has a regional language. We've been laughing about that this week. And she says things to me that I have no clue what she's talking about, don't you?
I thought it was global. Come on now.
And Veronica's from Canada. Akunuk. And so... This is something that we're really working with on the planet right now that I can see in terms of bringing healing and not living out the dark laws of our lineage. It is so tricky Now, everybody listening tonight has been working on their own healing on many, many levels. There's no question in my mind. But the dark laws, and I'll just share an experience I had today, which my mother absolutely, you know, had no use for men, except when she was younger. She had plenty of use for them. But she became a Christian Science practitioner, and in the few times that I did see her, it's not like I spent a lot of time with her, but as an adult, I saw her in 1988, which was the last time I saw her, and she went on and on about men are weak, and they, you know, women are the strong ones, and you don't need men. And, of course, as a Christian Science practitioner, something I haven't read Science of Mind and by Mary Baker Eddy, you know, their book for many, many years, but she was very adamant about the fact that sexuality was, you know, the higher you go in your spiritual growth, that the goal is to completely move out of all sexual contact. Now, I didn't realize that that had had an influence on me at some level until I was up on the table today, which I do every day during my break. And in she came and immediately went into, you know, you can't have sex. This is, you know, goes against your growth and your spiritual work, and you'll, you know, jeopardize your spiritual work. And I had to tell her to go. So we can have this influence from the other side of the veil. My mother is now deceased, just in case people know.
I think what's really interesting is a lot of people believe that when people release this life, they go to the other side, and then they're a lot more reasonable in their understanding. And it's really not so.
No.
People's personality, yeah.
I'm not altogether certain why that is, but I know I've encountered, and I know you have, Veronica, with your mother as well.
Yeah, and I actually have refused to speak with her, although usually that would be a very delightful thing, but I've said, no, I'm not going to hear this judgment, which is pretty interesting.
It's very interesting, and I have had myself people that I love dearly as great friends cross over and actually influence thoughts. You know, where I kept walking around going, why would I think that? That is not something I would think, you know, not something I really want to do. Why does that keep coming in?
It's a little like too much TV.
Good point. And this person, I helped them cross over because I realized that their influence was a little too heavy. Now, the sessions this week, which I've been fascinated by, and this is in addition to dealing with lineage and dark laws, and I'm going to talk about one in particular because it's so fascinating with these power retrievals. I honestly, and I have to say this to everyone, I don't know where they're going. I don't know how, you know, I'm always in awe of the work. It's like being an observer of what's happening. I'm just fascinated. And we were doing a session this afternoon on someone, and we were in the second chakra, and which is the chakra, the second chakra, is sensuality, sexuality, creativity, but it's also where you are hooked into your lineage, and also can be hooked into past lifetimes there in the third eye. What was fascinating to me was that in this particular session, there was all of this symbology showing up as we were taking things out of the second chakra, having to do with the embodiment of the divine feminine, and then all of this symbology of all these different lifetimes spent as a self-sacrificing nun, you know, living in poverty, vows of silence, and then the pompousness, I'm sorry for it, angry Catholic, but this was coming through her consciousness and how it was imprinted in her, of the royal gowns and so on and robes of the Pope, of bishops, cardinals, etc., and the disparity and injustice of all of that, just huge. I mean, we just kept cleaning stuff out and cleaning stuff out. Now, you know, and I want to just say here that lifetimes, because I think this is so important, that this to me is a classic case of someone who took lifetime imprints on, not necessarily living all those lifetimes, although she may have, but took on the imprints of those lifetimes to work with a specific energy around the reclamation of the feminine.
Hmm.
And also the degradation of the feminine and the disparity between what happened to women in spirituality. The only opportunity, and this came up during the session, that they had for spiritual growth was to become a nun. I thought this was fascinating.
Hmm.
And, you know, as we're way back in whatever century we're in, but the lives of nuns, even the furnishings, even the form of cross that they had where they resided was, you know, hand-hewn and very rough, and, you know, as opposed to the men who, you know, where they lived in their, the churches, of course, very grand and grand and very beautiful. And so it was a real setup for her to carry a lot of this anger and rage around religion. And so we've looked for this for a long time, trying to find out why she was so angry at the Pope. Because she's never been a Catholic in this lifetime.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Wow. So it was really fascinating to me that, you know, again, these opportunities are coming forward now for us to really get in touch with some very big things.
Well, you know, Jackie, I just wanted to link back to the expression dark lodge. So as you're talking about this and the feminine imprint and the abuse of the feminine, the suppression and all that, the dark laws that she's carrying regarding that would be what? That men are going to suppress us no matter what? Is that?
Well, we're back to the whole male chauvinistic paradigm that women were rendered, okay, to the lowest level. They
mm-hmm.
were basically servants
right.
and teachers, but nothing more.
Mm-hmm.
And they had very bleak lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not to say that monks didn't, but overall, priests, bishops, cardinals had it. You know, they had it pretty cushy.
Yeah, they did. Bright colors, lots of feathers.
Exactly. Yes, very much like the animal world.
Right. Oh dear.
So,
I know I've been a nun a number of times. I know that.
I'm sorry for laughing. I'd probably be one of those that would say to you, I've never been one, but...
Well, I'm all dressed in black here. I wonder if it's a habit.
Oh, very good one. Go ahead. And so you've been...
But I have lipstick on.
You've been a nun a number of lifetimes.
Yeah, and I think it gives you that kind of... there's sort of an austerity about the male-female thing. I don't know. I can't explain it, but I'm sort of feeling as you're talking... a real consciousness about having to be sort of suppressed and kind of carefully tuned so that you're not doing the wrong thing as a woman. I don't know, something like that.
Yes, that's very, very interesting. And again, it's something that, you know, looking at that, in addition to family lineage, of course, is the lifetime piece.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that you... again, could have taken these lifetimes on as imprints, like a giant, and I'll just explain this, prior to coming into incarnation, if you could think of yourself in front of a giant Rolodex or card file, going, I'm going to focus on this in this lifetime, especially this lifetime, because it's the culminating one,
mm-hmm.
and saying, okay, I want to take on these kinds of lifetimes to work on this issue. Now, does that invalidate that you may, in fact, have actually lived them? No, because... you will never know till you're on the other side of the veil whether you live them or not. You've got the emotions, the full memories, every aspect of it. I see a tremendous amount of this, and you and I have talked about this, Veronica, a tremendous amount of this in terms of archetypal lifetimes where so many people, you know, this has always been my question, and I know yours as well, how could so many people have been Cleopatra, you know, and Caesar?
Queen Nefertiti.
So...
But actually, I think about vibrationally, we sort of emanate these, don't we? I mean, like, you can actually pick out what somebody's trying to fulfill in this lifetime through their vibrational presentation. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Not everybody can do that, Veronica, but yes, I would agree with you.
Somebody said to me once, poor old Veronica. She doesn't know whether to be a go-go dancer or a nun.
Oh, that's very funny.
And if you think about it vibrationally, that's pretty clever, isn't it? I mean,
it's pretty close, too.
But it's actually quite insightful in her part, you know.
Yes, that was it was very insightful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with all of these factors in mind, lineage and lifetime influences, you know, we're here really to end this all, except if the lifetime influences and the lineage influences serve the higher purpose for what we're doing right now. Now, some of us have influences that we don't want to get rid of, you know, that we're very positive. So it's not, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, certainly. I really want to encourage everybody to sit down if you can. I mean, if you just want to think about it, it's certainly up to you. But to write down qualities of your grandparents and your parents, significant aunts and uncles, even cousins, you know, and take a look at whether or not those themes that you are familiar with are playing out in your life now. I had a great grandmother who I remember saying to me as a child, "You have the hands of a peasant." And do you know, to this day, that still impacts me. And for years, I had really super long fingernails because I refused to have the hands of a peasant. They're no longer practical, nor are they fashionable. But and but I think, you know, that this is now I see this, and I'm sure you do, Veronica, as well, because I want to talk here also about ethnic families, because in some of the power retrievals, we're really running into, again, the repression of the feminine, and there's been a theme of, at least with some of the people I've worked with, of sexual abuse, certainly, through the nationality, where, you know, this is almost accepted. Well, it is accepted in a very closeted way, which I found fascinating. And, of course, the dark laws and, you know, for people who are, you know, Middle Easterners, people of Asian descent, certainly they have, you know, come through tremendous struggles. You know, we only look at you know, Asians today and think of them as highly competent and everything they've accomplished and, you know, on all fronts. But their lineage bespeaks a whole different thing because so many of them were influenced, their parents were influenced by World War II. And many of them came over, many of the immigrants of all nationalities came to this country with tremendous struggle. So, you know, there's a lot of shame in there and a lot of struggle in there. Now, you know, we all tend to idealize, I think, our family history. But I think it's really worth a review to see if, in fact, you're playing it out somewhere. The part that I think is fascinating about this is that not only do you get it by being around it, but by being in the womb, you are so deeply imprinted by mother. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I think that's very complex. I agree totally.
And if mom, so, you know, I would always say, look to mom's lineage first. Then, and, you know, and Jewish people know this, that the lineage passes through the mother.
The other interesting thing, when I first started doing my work and looking at chakras, I remember looking at a woman saying, "You have a Jewish heritage." And she said, "Yes, I do." And what I saw in the red chakra was a whole, like, a description of fleeing, of being tribal and having to keep moving, and a lot of the, you know, the suffering thing that they do.
Persecution and suffering, yeah.
It was interesting because that's the first time I realized it was just sitting right there in the red chakra being...
The first chakra.
Yeah.
Safety and security and, yes.
And tribal, you know.
And tribal. Now, what's interesting about that as well is that for Jewish people, and I see this an awful lot with people who have this in their heritage, is that they spent the last 2,000 years being blamed for the death of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And not only were they persecuted for other reasons prior to, you know, Jesus being on the planet, but also having to deal with the additional persecution of being accused of killing Christ, when in fact they really did not. It was the Romans.
Right.
Okay, so they've had to carry the injustice, the shame, the rage, the resentment. I mean, all of this is sitting in, as you said, in that first chakra and sometimes in other chakras as well. Fascinating that you saw that.
Mm-hmm. It was fascinating me. And her, you know.
Well, you know, and that's where, you know, with the sessions, we work so much on lineage because we find it fascinating. I always say we find it fascinating. And from the very beginning, you know, they make me ask questions about mom, dad, grandparents on both sides, their health, their age of death, their nationality, and cause of death, and their general health today if they're alive.
Mm.
Because that is part of the imprint, interestingly enough, and it tells them an awful lot because the health is a direct line into the emotions.
Mm.
And then another thing on the first session is they always want me to ask about familial dark laws. What were your dark laws?
Mm.
And what religion were you raised in? What did dad do for a living? What did mom do for a living? You know, they have quite a filing system up there. So
I think this is quite relevant. I was speaking with a very beautiful young woman last night. She's 20 years old, and she reminded me of you in a way. Of course, you're beautiful, too. But also, she had been in very strange circumstances growing up, so there was actually this, there was non-attachment everywhere. She had no people to be attached.
Right.
And when I did a bit of a reading on her, I saw her in a Native American life where she was a woman who was a leader of a tribe, and she had these white feathers sort of hung on her shoulders and arms, and I think of the white feather as the healer's feather. But in that lifetime, she was leading a tribe, and many were being killed, and she had to keep leading and finally established a new community somewhere. But she could not be actually attached or connected in an affectionate or a supportive way. Do you know what I mean? Like, not in a context of family and so on. And I felt it was kind of an interesting, maybe not a dark law, but it's a continuation of a process where she's going to do an awful lot of innovative work in this life and doesn't seem to be going to be attached for quite a while to anyone so that she can be innovative, creative, and stand alone. It was a really powerful kind of image. And I thought of the number of rules that are driving her, if you know what I mean.
You know, I find that fascinating, and I certainly can relate to it.
Yeah. Well, I thought of you immediately. I looked in her, not that I see the native thing in you, but the independence that you have had to have in order to get to where you needed to get to.
Well, certainly in order to bring this work forward and to step forward with the whole ET thing.
And defending it. I mean, you have to be able to sort of hold your court and defend it carefully, you know?
Well, you couldn't worry about what anybody thought.
Right.
And I really, as you know, with all of the foster homes I lived in, all 13 or whatever there was, I really saw that as training. And but I did have the same detachment thing that she has, where
and
I wasn't allowed.
And she sees hers as training as well, which is interesting. Very, very wise old soul.
Good for her.
Yes. But I could see this her extension from this prior life that seems, again, back to dark laws, it seems to have created in her psyche the kinds of laws that she was living out. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and again, we know that when we're going to have a significant lifetime, there's preparation. There may be other lifetimes building up to it.
Exactly. I think, would you say many that would build up to a life that's culminating?
Oh, absolutely. I would say that Steve Rother, who channels the group, for all of you that it's lightworker.com, I think. Very, very nice work. very nice work, lovely man. And I was talking with him one day, and he said that he actually, it took 12 lifetimes to build up to this one in preparation. And for the work that he was here to do, I found that a really interesting statement.
Now, how much of that was he, of course, this is a silly question, how much would he be conscious of, you know, whilst he's going through them?
Oh, I don't necessarily think you're conscious of it going through them, would be my guess. I really don't know.
But sometimes I think the laws are, maybe the dark laws are kind of a lattice work to keep a soul trained to go through that, the growth it takes to get to those lives of culmination.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree with you, very much so. And I don't tend to have access to lifetimes anymore since I died, so it's not the... I have these significant ones for me, but anything in between is pretty much gone. Mm. It just doesn't seem to be there. So I don't know if they were just all imprints or, you know, I have no idea.
But it doesn't really matter, does it?
No, it really does not matter, except for me, you know, my curiosity, but it certainly I just don't seem to be able to go there anymore. I used to have spontaneous bleed-throughs of lifetimes, and I don't have that experience any longer. I feel very detached, which is real interesting.
That's part of your route, too. That's part of the route you've taken to become more and more evolved.
Evidently.
Come on, Jackie, you're evolved.
Oh, I could have done it a lot easier.
Oh, if I'd known then what I know today.
Absolutely. So, you know, let's talk a minute here about also the dark laws of religion. We just talked about Judaism, but which, of course, is nationality and religion. And region. And those can play in as well. I mean, if you know, if you've grown up in a farming community and your ancestors grew up there, you have a whole different lineage of dark laws that have to do with the earth and survival and, you know, nature and the forces of nature. That plays in on a whole other level. Now, Veronica, you grew up in Canada. You have a different, you know, just based on the way your country was run, wouldn't you agree that you would have a different set of kind of dark laws in terms of... Now, you became... Now, this is such an interesting story. You became quite an activist, didn't you?
Yes, I did. But as far as the dark laws, I'm just wondering if this is accurate, but I remember thinking I would like to write about what this... Like, Americans and Canadians come from the same stock, but there's a deep impulse in Canada, which is work for the good of the group. And in America, the deep one is an individualistic competition kind of thing.
Self-serving.
Well, yeah, I wasn't trying to be pejorative here. I was just thinking that we were taught always to try and, you know, and we were taught this in school. You always try to work for the good of the group.
Well, you know,
And it's not socialistic, I mean, in the kind of...
No.
But I think that is one of the laws that's way in the subconscious.
Well, and that's actually beautiful, and I happen to love Canadians. I've spent a tremendous amount of time up in Calgary. And
well, we can get nasty and self-serving, believe me.
I don't know. I loved everybody up there. I just thought they were absolutely fabulous. And a whole different stuff. Well, I'm a firm believer that people that come from cold countries are survivors anyway. You know, those of us who grew up in California are wussy. But people who've come from cold country, they have a different way about them. They help each other. They're very self-sufficient. You know, they know how to handle tough times. And
they know how to mull cider or wine.
Yes, they also know how to do that.
Actually, I lived in a little town in northern B.C. Well, Prince George is not that small. And we only lived there for a couple of years, and it's not a pretty town or anything, and a lot of people lived there for a while developing their professional doodah, and we never had so much fun. I learned so much. We swapped tales. We worked harder together there than I have anywhere else that I've lived. It's pretty interesting.
Well, and again, so, you know, some of this then becomes a light law instead of a dark law.
Yeah, probably. Hey?
Okay, and those light laws you don't want to throw out because they're beautiful.
Mm-hmm. But they are laws.
They are laws.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within your family structure, you may have some very beautiful light laws. I know in from my perspective and all the people I work with, interestingly enough, many times the mentor is not mom and dad, but can be a grandparent, an uncle, or an aunt, whatever. And that person, especially if mom and dad are really tough, comes in as the real mentor for the child. And, you know, when we look back at it, their influence was far greater. And generally speaking, when I've done power retrievals, what has been interesting is when we've pulled in that particular person, be it, again, aunt, uncle, grandparents, whatever, they have held more power for the individual than anyone. Power retrievals of mom and dad, you know, emotionally charged, sure. But when we get to the great influence of the mentor, they have always given power to the person experiencing a power retrieval.
Hmm.
And it's been so incredible when they could finally realize how many, you know, can see their lineage with this person back into off-planet lifetimes and so on. So powerful. So incredibly powerful. And so, you know, I don't ever want to understate. I think we get very myopic when we think about mom and dad and sometimes forget about how great an influence someone else in our life could be. I happen to have had a foster parent that was a great influence. Certainly not my cup of tea, but she was kind of the grand dame of Beverly Hills. And she gave me, I mean, truly, you know. And she moved in very powerful circles. And so I had very early training in terms of how to deal with, you know, going to the Hilton for tea and doing this and that. It was really wonderful. It was kind of part of the whole potpourri of families that I lived with. It was part of my repertoire now of energy. Not that I want to go do that, but it gave me the ability to be able to deal with powerful people and not think twice about it. It, you know, it's never mattered to me, and it certainly served me well in business.
So that would be a very intense contract that you made with someone, with
yes.
a being.
Yes, they stepped in when I was 5, and they mentored me until I was about 18.
Hmm.
And now it was a strange relationship because their daughter had died at 5, but nevertheless, my time that I spent with them, you know, which was maybe every couple of weeks and, you know, a week or two in the summer and so on, was enough to give to round out my experience so that, you know, some of the other people I lived with, you know, some were, you know, very highly educated, you know, very brilliant. Some were very poor, very simple, and it was a wonderful, you know, cross-section of everything. So, also, though, I just assume it adds to my whole list of dark laws.
Does it? Does it actually? Or is the spreading out of the influences, does that not weaken some of the impact?
Yes,
or the
yes it does. Yes,
yeah.
It does. Yeah, actually it does. I laugh about it, but yes, it very much does.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that which was carried in the womb, and those influences in you know, the 1 to 5 year time frame that you don't remember necessarily, because like so many people that are listening here, so many of us don't remember our childhood. I don't. I know you do.
I remember a lot of it.
Yes. I remember almost nothing of, you know, up to, well, I won't even go into there. I remember bits and pieces, but certainly not much of it in its entirety. And also, for those who are listening, if you've had a lot of abduction experiences, interestingly enough, I've found that majority of you have very little childhood memory.
Hmm.
Now, that's not an across the board. That doesn't mean that you could not have had them and still have good childhood memory. But generally speaking, a lot of people I've talked with that have had abduction experiences have very vague childhoods.
So the dark laws are lineage. So, for example, if you're... if you have had abduction experiences but you don't remember, is the not remembering a dark law?
That's a really interesting question. And I'll,
is another
I'll
left
answer,
hook on your desk?
I'm
going
to answer it this way. If you've had abduction experiences, the chances are that those abductions have run through your lineage.
Okay.
They didn't just happen to you, generally speaking, although with some people they have. But generally speaking, there is a lineage, potentially your mother or father had experiences, certainly your children, not all of them, but probably one or several of them have had experiences. It is a lineage issue, yes. Can it become a dark law? Very much so, to answer your question. Very good question, Veronica.
Thank you.
It's a real good question.
Well, it sort of is in alignment with a lot of the secrets we were meant to keep as children because people didn't talk about certain things, right?
Well, and, you know...
Those are also dark laws.
You're absolutely right. Yes, they are dark laws. But that's part of it. It's like the elephant in the living room. For people that we've worked with, people who may be listening, who came out of alcoholic families, so often I have seen where it became a secret. If there was, and it's something you didn't talk about, the elephant in the living room. There was also the incest, something you didn't talk about, the elephant in the living room. And so that does become a dark law. And because there's shame attached to alcoholism, there's shame attached to incest. I worked with a lady the other day who she was having experiences for many, many years with a relative, and everyone knew this relative did this. No one helped her. They would hear her screaming in the other room, and everyone was afraid of this person because of the country she was in, the influence that he held, which gave him license to do anything because everyone was afraid of him. And so the healing of these experiences has been really big with mom, dad, different relatives who were aware and did nothing and actually couldn't do anything. Again, this gets, you know, back into, you know, depending on where you grew up, what were the circumstances, you know, what country, what nationality, because that definitely figures in. And she's done incredible, incredible healing. But a lot of
sad story, though, isn't it?
Yes, a lot of deep work to get there. And she's an incredible healer in her own right. Amazing healer. But, you know, with all healers have damage, and so we help each other get through this. I think that's the impetus to get us to be healers.
Yeah, I think so.
Have enough pain to where we then decide, okay, well, I'm going to help other people. I don't want them to suffer the way that we have.
Well, I think it awakens your perception. These kinds of pains stretch us so that our perceptions grow beyond the tolerance of the third-dimensional insanity.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you that this can absolutely expand. You know, it's interesting, Dr. Mack, and I, you know, I want to say this because this is a real interesting sidebar, but you're absolutely right. One of the questions, Dr. John Mack, for those that don't know, professor of psychiatry at Harvard, who's now gone, someone I love dearly, people who claim to have had experiences with abductions and so on, one of the first questions they're always asked is, did you have or were you sexually abused as a child? Now, what I have found and found to be very interesting is that some of the sexual abuse people thought they had were actually abduction experiences and screened. And in the screening process by the grave, and sometimes reptilians, it actually looked like or came back into memory as a sexual experience. And I myself have one of those. So when I got in touch with that, I was fascinated. And
so the syndrome would be sort of like a post-trauma thing?
It's post-trauma.
Getting out of your own body.
And that their philosophy here is that if you've had extremely invasive, traumatic experiences, that you go into fantasy in order to deal with them. Now, I have never seen a child that could go into the fantasy of being abducted by extraterrestrials as a result of, you know, having of being sexually molested. But in my, you know, with the work that we do, we're able to kind of backdoor this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated, absolutely fascinated, that many times I've worked with people who felt that they were molested as a child, and we've gone through it, and actually, you know, certainly the team can see it. I get to see through their eyes that, in fact, there was other factors involved, mm-hmm. and that they were not necessarily molested.
I think that the whole show is what abuse does to people's consciousness, and what it stretches and what it doesn't, and what imprints mean. You know, I think it's a really interesting subject.
That it is. Mm-hmm. I'll put that on our list here.
Yes.
but back to your original question was, can it stretch you, and does it stretch you to expand beyond normal limits of human consciousness? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I very seldom have, I'm certain you have the same thing, Veronica, very seldom have we met anybody who has extraordinary psychic ability or intuitive abilities that hasn't had traumatic childhood.
Right.
Except
some people are born, is it, what's her name, Sylvia Brown, was born to it, right?
Well, that...
she comes from a long line of it. And there are various people that get a bonk over the head and then, boing, they're open. I'm going, wow, that seems a lot easier.
Well, you know, when we first started doing the sessions, before they really knew how to work with humans totally, we had an experience where we put somebody on the table and they were instantly psychic.
Wow.
And so we had to back way off. I mean, this was in the early experimental stages. And this person is an attorney. I still know her to today.
Did you abduct her to put her on your table?
Nope. Nope. She actually came voluntarily. But watching what she went through, having that kind of experience to be opened that quick,
mm-hmm.
it was too much on her.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it looks like to me, and since I've seen her lately... in social situations, it's been very interesting. It looks as though they've started to shut, they went back in and shut her down some because it was too much.
Yeah.
She actually became almost non-functional. She was in such overwhelm.
Mm.
Because the energies would just blow through her hands, and she just, she'd walk in and say, you've done this many sessions since you started working, and she would hit the number on the head.
Mm.
She was that psychic.
Mm.
It was too much.
Yeah, really.
So, you know, we had to learn that we can't.
Well, I know when I was opening up, I went through very, very painful things of, like, vibrations running through my body, and I would shake and cry at nighttime because it just kept going on and on until I was, you know, more and more able to conduct the frequencies, you know. So that wasn't instantaneous, so I don't know how a person would open up immediately.
Again, it's too much for the human psyche.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I consider that part of the early experimental stage.
Nobody lined up for that one, huh?
Well, no, I actually have people who are, no, there are lots of people that would have loved to have had it.
Mm-hmm.
It was very funny. So back to lineage. I hope that we've been able to give you some ideas here. Again, I'd really recommend that people really play with this. Look at families. Look at your brothers and sisters, if you have siblings. You know, what are they playing out? That will also give you a clue. It's interesting because that's part of that first session. We do siblings as well, and it's fascinating to me to see the diseases and the emotional traumas that show up in the siblings, that you know it's all lineage. You know, it's all not only family circumstances and direct experience, but also this dark law stuff and lineage all being played out.
And Jackie, you can actually step out of that, can't you?
You have to do some work, yes.
Yeah.
There is no question about it. Once you become aware of it,
mm-hmm.
you'll find it start to unravel. You'll really become aware of how you're thinking, what you're... And here's the interesting thing. Let's say mom carried all of her lineage stuff and all of her dark law stuff. You're in the womb. Without knowing it, you will attract into your life experience. Okay, now, of course, it's reaffirmed through your childhood because mom's carrying this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you will then attract people that will fit into those dark lots. You know, men are bad, men are weak. You'll attract them. Life is hard, you'll attract it.
And you'll think there's no life beyond that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. And not know where you got the belief. Most people don't really sit down and think, what is my belief about this situation? Why do I keep attracting the same thing over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
What is the belief, the underlying belief, that puts me back in this situation? That's the piece you want to get to. What is the underlying belief? Now, looking at your dark laws and your lineage is a piece of it. It's not going to give you every answer, but certainly will give you a head start. Now, are we running up on the hour? Yes, we are. Veronica, talk about your radio show, honey.
My radio show is Radiance by Design. It's how we learn to radiate, very like what Jackie's just talking about, how we learn to radiate more consciously so we attract back more of our affirmative, you know, what is it we prefer. And it's Tuesday at 4 o'clock, and it's a call-in show. And then at 5 o'clock, we have Paradigm Shifters, and that's just different people that we interview that are really making a difference on the planet. And I want Jackie and the team to come on Paradigm Shifters at 5 o'clock Tuesday, whatever it is. And I ask her over and over again. But
I know, it's only because it interferes with my work schedule, but I will figure a way to arrange it.
I think the team's going to arrange it one day.
Yes, I already know. They love you. They'd love to do it.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
You know me. I just work here. All right. And your website, honey?
VeronicaEntwistle.com. And there's no H in Entwistle.
And for those of you that don't know, Veronica is an incredible intuitive and reads energy. She's amazing, amazing, amazing. I consider her not only a fabulous co-host, but an incredible friend. To me, she's like a sister.
Thank you.
I have great love and respect for her. Our website here is ethealing.com. And we're so excited to have all of you on the air listening with us. We love you all. I say this every week, and I mean it from my heart. A piece of Veronica and I is in every one of you, and a piece of every one of you is in us. It can be no other way. We really are all one. What is created together is forever intertwined. That goes for our entire universe. We cannot be separate, and we aren't. And the more that we recognize that and see that in everyone, everywhere, the faster we'll come to peace on this planet. I love you all. Look forward to talking to you all again next week. Thank you so much. Have a wondrous time doing your Christmas shopping. Try to remember that when people cut you off in traffic.
The zen of shopping.
Yes, the zen of shopping. Do hold in consciousness all the people on this planet right now that are dealing with hunger and in need of even, you know, clothing and a warm place to sleep. This is not a martyr statement, but it is the fact that we all are miracle makers, every one of us. We're magicians, and we can make a difference on this planet. Remember that as you're out shopping and doing what you need to do for the holiday season. We love you all. Veronica, thank you so much. I adore you.
Thank you, Jackie. Much love to you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.